and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Scare Blast Podcast. And now here's your host, Lisa Burton.
Hey everybody, welcome to Scare Blast Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Burton, and today we have an actor-improviser here in Chicago, Illinois, Mr. Harrison George, talking to us today. Hi, Harrison.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, very good.
So Harrison chose the David Lynch movie, Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me.
Right.
Which is the most bizarre. It's considered a psychological thriller horror.
Yeah.
And I had to look up what that meant when I first saw this, that
What did it say?
It said that it is a horror movie that focuses on the character's fears and emotional instability to ratchet up the tension.
Wow.
That was basically, it was like using specifically the character's fears and emotion, which you could absolutely see in this
movie. Oh, makes perfect sense, yeah.
It's really fucked and weird.
Yeah, very upsetting.
So, to get us started, Harrison, do you like scary movies?
I love scary movies. I do. Okay. I grew up watching them. I have a brother who's about a year younger than me, and we watched... I remember being 9 or 10 and watching all the Chucky movies and all the Jason movies, like all the really bloody stuff. And since then, I've just, like every year, Halloween and scary movies and stuff has always been my favorite part of the year, to see new scary stuff.
Yeah, are you a, are you more of a slasher movie person?
I think I used to be, and then I think now I'm at a point where I really like suspense.
Yeah.
I like really grabbing the arms of the chair and like really freaking out about what's going to happen next. So movies like this that... are mainly about suspense, I think they scare me a lot more.
Yeah, can I ask you what excites you about scary movies? Or, like, why do you like them? Or have you ever thought about that?
I think it's just, one, I like suspense and I like not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
You watch a comedy, it's kind of easy to predict where the punchline is or, like, where you're going to laugh, but you don't always know where you're going to scream.
Uh-huh.
So I think that, and then also I just like being introduced to things that make me squeamish or uncomfortable. Like,
yeah.
We spend so much of our everyday life avoiding gross, scary things.
Yeah.
It's fun to just kind of dive into it for 2 hours at a time.
Totally. Yeah. So this movie, Twin Peaks.
Oh my gosh.
Fire Walk With Me. Those of you that are familiar with the Twin Peaks series, this is, I was saying, both a prologue and an epilogue.
It kind of wraps, kind of bookends the story.
Yeah, the story of this Twin Peaks thing. And this movie, I should also say, comes out after Twin Peaks, the series.
Yeah.
So this movie was 92,
mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
92.
So after the show had ended, yeah.
Yeah. So, Harrison, will you please summarize this
crazy-ass
movie?
So I can definitely try. It's mainly about a young woman in the small town of Twin Peaks. It's the main character from Laura from the TV show.
Yeah.
And while in the TV show, she was already dead and a FBI agent was trying to find out who killed her. This TV show, the movie is basically the 7 days leading up to and then right after her death. So you follow her through school and through what she does after school and then start to piece together the clues that were left for you in the TV show about like what actually happened when she died.
So if we're detectives,
mm-hmm.
and we're at Twin Peaks.
Okay.
We show up
as
FBI agents,
yeah.
at Twin Peaks. And we're trying to uncover what happened to Laura Palmer.
Uh-huh.
Who's the villain?
Who do I think is the villain?
Who do you think is the villain? Who do we pinpoint? You and I are FBI detectives.
Yes.
Okay.
Detective Burton,
okay, Detective George. Yes. Who do we... Now we have all of this information.
Okay.
This is... We
all
right. literally...
It's all in the case file.
It's all in the case file.
Okay.
We literally, like, we got a small videotape of exactly what happened
okay.
that night. And we see this happen. We even got, like, weird otherworldly information
okay.
of this other world... another world that's happening. How do you solve this case? Who do you arrest? Do you arrest anyone? Do you blame anyone? Is there someone to blame? Do you just walk the fuck away?
Yeah, and burn the case file?
Yeah.
I feel like there's no way Leland, the dad, cannot... You got to put handcuffs on that guy.
Yeah, that
But
guy
one thing
kills.
Or another... I mean, he killed. That's the other thing we haven't stated.
Mm-hmm.
So towards the end, things get really crazy, and you find out that Leland, the dad, killed the girl that
Laura.
Started it. Yeah, he kills Laura, but then I think he also killed
Teresa.
The girl. Teresa.
Yeah.
from a year ago.
Yeah.
And that's like what started the whole case.
So he's actually like a serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, he's done it before and it wasn't like,
yeah.
So he's pretty messed up. So yeah, it's like Leland definitely.
And now wait, what part does he play in the town, within the town as a whole? Is he like, is he the sheriff's brother? Is he the, or is he a higher up?
I feel like he's a well-respected individual in the town. Because in the very first episode, I remember we meet him and he's in a business meeting. Okay. And the cops come to tell him that Laura's dead.
Right.
And so he, I'm trying to remember. Like,
and is that in Twin Peaks?
That's in the TV show. Yeah,
that's in the TV show.
He's like, it's like whether it's formal or informal, he's definitely somebody that carries water in that town.
I do feel like because of those details,
yeah,
you really do need to have seen the series in order to piece together some of the relationships that were evident in this movie.
Exactly, yeah. And it's weird because a lot of the characters and a lot of the relationships don't make it to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like just watching the TV show to focus on the dad, Leland and Laura's relationship probably would like serve you. It'd be really interesting to talk to somebody that watched the TV show and then the movie in order the way you're supposed to. What was interesting while I was researching it was like a lot of people who loved the TV show the most ended up hating the movie. I feel bad for the movie because it's like critics didn't like, people who didn't like the TV show, of course, didn't like the movie.
Yeah.
But then people who loved the TV show thought it was maybe just a grab for more money.
Yeah.
Like a shameless continuation of something that had been successful. And it's like the only people that seemed happy with it were the cast and David Lynch in terms of like, David Lynch was just like, I want to continue with these characters. Like, totally. There's still more here to uncover.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, and ultimately, who was happy with it.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I do think, I'm like, Leland is probably...
He needs to go to jail.
And then there's this weird subculture of, like, what was going on in the bar and, like, the cabin.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, this prostitution drug ring where people were paying for sex with drugs.
Yep.
And it's like, they need to be investigated for sure.
Yes.
Those guys were creeps.
Those guys were real creeps.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys were clear creeps.
Yeah.
Maybe not murderers.
No, maybe not. Yeah, maybe not killers, but like lowlives to the extreme.
Yeah.
That need to be talked to. Yeah, I mean, like there's an investigation there.
Watch out, lowlives.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Detective Burton and Detective
yeah,
George,
we're going to solve that case.
Door.
20 years later, cold case file. Because it's like, it does become relative where it's like you're dealing in this world with Leland the serial killer and Bob the demon. These other just maybe perverts, they kind of get away with it, but it's like they seem less threatening but it's like they're still bad dudes, probably.
Yeah, they're bad dudes.
Yeah.
I was interested, I did not write down her name. There was a woman, Mary something, that is the editor for this movie.
Oh.
And I am so curious to know what David Lynch told her about the editing process.
Yeah.
Because there is, you can also find, this is a very cut script of this movie.
Yeah.
There's a much longer script, hours worth of more material for this movie that I would be so fascinated to read through at some point. Just like take a week, sit down and chew
put
on it.
Put yourself in a cabin and read it.
Because
maybe it answers more questions. Maybe it just raises more questions.
Yeah.
But yeah, how do you edit a David Lynch movie?
How do you edit this movie?
Yeah.
And to me, one of the most unnerving scenes, there's one with the kid skipping around with that mask on.
Yeah.
The soundscape of this movie, too, was so prominent. So you hear the child's feet skipping on the ground, and then the child disappears from literally, you're watching the frame, and the child fades out.
Yeah.
And you still hear his feet skipping on the pavement. And it's just that, like, to me, that scene was very evident of the idea that Laura Palmer was killed, so she's gone. Like, she was once a child. She's no longer a child. She's clearly been corrupted. If we were talking about the fears that are in this movie, it's like the fears of a small town hiding big secrets.
Yeah.
How stifling that can be.
Yeah.
The idea of a big city impeding on a small town.
Yeah.
Like the FBI agents coming in.
What he represents.
What he represents. The man. Like.
Yeah. Law and order. That's what I feel like is like he, through the FBI and like just the way Dale is like structure and law and order and like good versus like black, this black and white that we hope exists when it comes to law and order that doesn't have any effect on this world. Like there's this gray, this town is just under a gray cloud that like doesn't, it can't be affected by the law.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like your question where it's like putting somebody in jail, this isn't the kind of movie that, like, putting handcuffs on the bad guy at the end of the movie makes anybody feel better.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Because you're like, yeah, but that woman at the pie shop still exists who is covering everything up for everybody.
Exactly.
She knows everything and isn't saying anything.
Exactly.
The sheriff and the, the deputy and the woman behind the desk laugh at the FBI agents when they show up.
Exactly.
There's no safe place in this town.
And I didn't realize this until I watched it this time. At the very beginning, when the FBI agents show up and they talk to like a deputy or a sheriff's assistant, he comes back, that character comes back later. He's selling drugs in the woods. He's the drug messenger. So it's like, you can't even trust the police.
Right.
Because they're all involved in it to some degree.
So does that make you, like, if you are looking at this movie, like, would you go visit a town like Twin Peaks?
Town?
Yeah.
No.
Why?
Would stay very far away. I would either be a victim of it and I would get chopped up or killed, or worse, you'd become corrupted. And like, I don't want to live that kind of lifestyle.
So maybe that is what it is. Maybe it's the fear of small towns is maybe what it is. Where it's like this fear that small towns are so... I wonder where David Lynch is from. Like, that makes me... It begs a lot of questions.
Like, what was his childhood like? And, like, did he grow up in a town that he hated? And, like... Because, it's almost like it's this gross, germy... I don't know what it is. It's like a sponge that's been left alone too long. And it's like, there's just something growing in this small town that, like, can't be fixed. The whole town needs to be wiped out.
Yeah.
And it's cool that... one thing I also love about the show and the movie is that part of the country.
Yeah,
and like,
me too. It's beautiful.
You just, as evil and gross as everything else is, the trees and the water and stuff is just breathtaking.
It is. It's breathtaking in the same way to me that, and it's a similar surrounding that Alaska is also breathtaking.
Yeah.
Which is why that area of the country becomes such a, so rife for mystery type things, because everything's gray all the time.
Yeah.
Which makes all the greens and colors pop.
Yeah.
Which also, and also the foliage, because it's primary rainforest, everything is so thick.
Yeah.
So you, like, there are horror stories, like, of people walking into the woods to go pee, like, pulling their car over on the side of the road, walking 5 feet into the woods to go pee and getting lost because they can't find their way back to their car.
And it just kind of envelops you. Like,
it just
takes you on, which is, like, what that town does.
Yeah. It's very, claustrophobic and...
Yeah.
But yeah, I also really love that painting that she gets from Mrs. Chalfant. The one she puts on her wall, Laura puts on her wall, that's got the white door on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that scene where they pan away from Laura, who either has just gotten raped or just came back from the bar or something. I can't remember.
Right.
She's about to go to sleep though.
And she's, yeah.
And she's sitting in the dark, and they focus in on the painting and on the door, which the door somehow then leads to another place.
Exactly.
It leads to the other place. Which, again, is this, like, art takes you away, art takes you to someplace else.
Right. It's a doorway, it's a passageway, gateway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also has a gateway into our world. Like, somehow it's all linked together.
Yeah. Which is cool to think about when you think of David Lynch as a painter. Like, it's cool that it was a painting that, like, that symbolized that.
Similarly to these movies, have you ever seen Jim Henson? Any of the original, like, his, like, college films?
I saw Timepiece, which
is
kind of the same, like... absurd, surreal, non-linear storytelling, right?
Right. Using, like, a lot of sound. And sound to get you from one thing to the
next. That's very true.
And this reminded me a lot of Timepiece by Jim Henson. Because I was like, oh, man, there's a lot of, like, really absurd and disorienting and unnerving... about this.
There's a really funny video on YouTube. I don't know who made it or why it's there, but somebody took the trailer for a Goofy movie, the cartoon, yeah, and then re-edited it to make it look like it was a David Lynch movie.
Yeah.
And it's just so perfect where it's like every trope that you could find in a David Lynch movie, where it's disorienting and it's non-linear, and like characters will just fade to like static, and like voices will disappear while the mid-sentence. And it's like, I highly recommend, if you want a very quick sample of like what David Lynch is,
uh-huh,
go watch the Goofy movie re-edited that way. Because they just do such a good job of like, yeah, that's the perfect David Lynch. Like, very, and it's fun to take something so innocent and childlike and then like
turn it
just
into,
completely destroy it.
If you were to, let's see, if you were to give this movie a rating based on mysterious green rings,
oh,
and you
yeah
were to give this like 10 mysterious green rings, means that you would highly recommend this to somebody else,
okay,
and you 100% love it. One mysterious green ring means that you did not like it and that you would not recommend it to someone. How many mysterious green
rings
gosh would you give this movie?
I would, that's really tough.
Yeah.
I think that I would have to give it somewhere in the middle, like a 6 or a 7 mysterious green rings, because I really love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I love all of his movies. They mean a lot to me. But I can't blame anybody if they were to watch it and then not enjoy it or even hate it.
Yeah.
It's not like, I really also like The Shining. And it's,
oh,
like,
yeah, me too.
The Shining is also scary and slow and suspenseful. And if you don't like it, I have probably will think less of someone who doesn't.
Yeah.
But with these David Lynch movies, I'm like, not your cup of tea.
Up for interpretation.
Totally understand. But I also think it's something you should check out.
Yes.
And see.
To
like, you should know that it's there.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, whether you watch this or Eraserhead or, like, just something of his.
Yeah.
So you know what it's all about.
Arguably, I've heard Mulholland Drive is maybe the most accessible,
yeah,
of them, because it's a little more linear.
Yeah.
And
it's still very good. It's still very David Lynch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or maybe
dark,
an episode,
yeah,
of the TV show. I'm trying to think of, like,
yeah,
what's the most palatable, because even him at his most even him at his most tame is still pretty upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And it's good, it is a good conversation piece. Like,
yeah.
Everybody has a different interp.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great.
I think it's, so ultimately it's like a 6 or 7 green ring in that I like it. I think it's something you should see. I don't want you to think of me when you watch it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's not a movie I would recommend and like hand over to someone.
I think as far as like liking it, if I were to,
yeah,
if I were to give a rating, I would say like 4 or 5 green rings.
Yeah.
Because I did not care for it as much.
Yeah.
But it was good thought food. Like, it,
yeah,
was good thought food. And it's good, it's a good reference point.
Yeah.
Having seen the series, I'm glad that I've seen this now.
Yeah.
To know, to like see the prologue and the epilogue.
It fills in a little bit of stuff in its own way.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does. And I do love those characters. I mean, I,
yeah,
really did. I liked the Twin Peaks series a lot.
Yeah.
I really liked that series a lot. So this movie, I thought, was
definitely not something I could watch. I mean, again, I've only watched it 4 or 5 times compared to like Jason or like Chucky I watch all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is definitely not a Desert Island movie.
Yeah.
But it's like, definitely the first time I watched it had such a big impact on me.
Yeah.
And like scared me in ways I hadn't been scared before.
Yeah. I have trivia questions.
Great.
Okay. So the budget for this movie was $10 million.
Oh.
That was the budget for this movie.
Okay.
How much money do you think this movie made at box office?
Oh man. I would be surprised. I don't think it made $10 million. I would say $2 million.
That's a great guess.
Yeah.
It made $4.2 million.
Oh, wow.
4.2,
okay.
Which is more than you thought.
Yeah.
But also, not enough.
Not nearly enough.
Not
no
nearly enough. Yeah. So
yeah,
they lost a lot of money on this,
yeah,
movie. Which is, yeah, a stark contrast to a lot of other horror movies that don't spend,
yeah,
a lot on production and then end up making a bunch
a
of
bunch
fucking money.
Yeah.
We were talking about that bar that,
mm-hmm,
Laura and Donna,
yeah,
end up in, which you also see a lot of Laura Palmer's boobs in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you like boobs, I mean, Laura Palmer's boobies. What is the name of the bar that Laura,
oh,
and Donna end up in, where Laura is topless and getting eaten out?
Oh,
with
my
her
God.
Other friend?
Such an insane scene.
Yeah.
I felt like it had the word blue in it. Was it the Blue Mill?
That is a great guess. The Bang Bang Bar.
Oh, the Bang Bang Bar.
It's
what a terrible name.
Yeah, one of them, the color thing, there is another bar in town called, like, the Pink Lagoon or something. Yeah. It's the pink something.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one was the Bang Bang Bar.
Which all I those thought, perverts were.
Yeah, totally appropriate.
Yeah.
All right. So at the very beginning, we talked about how crazy that opening scene was.
Yeah.
With the woman in red, in a red dress, who has red hair and is doing this weird, she looks like a clown.
Yeah.
She's doing a weird clown dance.
Yeah.
At them, and it's freaky. It's like,
it's very upsetting.
It's upsetting and weird. And David Lynch as
Gordon Cole.
So, Gordon Cole, that guy, shows the two detectives this woman before they get on a plane to go to Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Because this woman is doing this dance, this weird dance, that symbolizes everything they need to know.
Yeah.
Before they leave, which also is this artsy fucking like David Lynchian.
Yeah.
What if we made a painting move?
Yeah,
style,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you remember what any of her movements meant?
Oh man.
I'll give you. How about this?
Yeah.
I'm gonna name a movement.
Okay.
And I'd like you to try and talk.
Okay,
to
that's
me
great.
What it means. She has a sour face. What does that mean?
Does it mean bad news?
That's a great guess. It means trouble with authority.
Oh, trouble with authorities.
One hand in the pocket.
She's got a secret.
She's hiding something.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding. She's walking in place.
Things aren't changing.
Oh, very close. They need to do a lot of legwork.
Oh.
A lot of legwork. Yep. She's wearing a tailored dress. There's a different color. They specifically say there's a different color thread that they use to tailor her dress. What does that mean?
Look at the finer details.
Ooh, there are drugs involved.
Oh, drugs involved.
There are drugs involved.
Yeah.
Both her eyes are blinking.
pay attention.
There's trouble higher up. Specifically with two of the officers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is so intricate. Her other hand, the hand that was not in her pocket, was a fist. She's making a fist.
Someone is angry?
It meant that the authorities are going to be belligerent.
Belligerent, right.
Yes.
Which is true, which is what we talked about.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. David Lynch, what are you doing?
David Lynch, you're like,
so silly.
So weird. Also, this is a fun cameo. So,
yeah.
When Laura was... we had talked about Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
We had talked about David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
When Laura Palmer is laying in bed, she turns around and there's a dead girl, Annie, laying next to her with a bloody face. What actress plays Annie?
Heather Graham.
Heather Graham.
For 30 seconds.
Right?
Yeah.
I thought it was so neat. I was like, oh, I recognize that. Who
is
that?
A very young Heather Graham.
Yeah, I was really excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any trivia? Did you bring anything?
Yeah. We mentioned... David Bowie, speaking just about cameos, David Bowie and a few others were like underpaid or like didn't take as much of the budget as they wanted. Who was the second musician cameo?
Oh.
There was another famous musician that played a small part. Do you remember who it was?
Let me think about it. I'm also like trying to think of who I would know. I'm not great with names of, like, actors and musicians, but...
He's only, like, he's not... I would not call him a household musician name these days.
Okay. Well, because I also know this person was, like, on Pete and Pete at about the same time he was doing a lot of things. Iggy Pop. I'm gonna guess Iggy
Pop.
Oh,
no, that would be, because he's a friend of David Bowie. It was Chris Isaak played the other detective.
Oh, right.
Desmond.
Yeah, cool.
So, I think he's acted a little bit. I feel like I've seen him in other stuff.
That guy, I recognized him as, like, in other stuff, but I didn't know. Yeah, that's awesome.
He was great.
He was awesome.
I would watch more of him. So, my second question is, why was Dale Cooper's part in the movie so short or limited? Do you know?
Ooh.
Did you hear about that?
Yes, hold on. It's because I did hear about this. He he had issues with something. I can't remember exactly, because I did a lot of this research like in the last 8 hours, so it's all starting to jumble together.
Oh, for sure.
But he...
It's the same reason a lot of other actors, or like a lot of other characters from the TV show,
weren't in it. Yeah, he wasn't sure that it was going to be consistent with the TV show. Is that why?
Kyle MacLachlan, the actor, was afraid, like, because the second season had gone so poorly, they were like, I don't know if this is a good idea to continue the story. And then two, he specifically was worried about, like, typecasting.
Because
up until that point, he hadn't done much. And he's like, if I keep going down this path, am I only ever going to play babyface detectives?
Yes.
Typecasting. From there, I feel like he's doing okay. He was in Portlandia. He used to play the mayor.
Oh, yeah.
And then if anybody watches Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., he had a reoccurring character in the second season.
Oh, cool.
He's just, I think he's great.
Yeah.
I think he just seems like a nice guy.
I do too, yeah. He does seem like a nice guy. And, like, baby-faced.
Yeah.
I would never peg him as, like, the baby-faced detective.
No.
To me, in this David Lynch movie, this would be, in my eyes, like, an anomaly for this particular actor. It's like, oh, I would never have chosen you for that role.
Yeah.
But David Lynch did. And
yeah, David Lynch, big fan.
Yeah.
Kyle MacLachlan.
And more power to him.
One final question. This is more about David Lynch than Firewalk With Me. What was the famous sequel that David Lynch was asked to direct that he eventually turned down?
Ooh.
Like, blockbuster sequel.
This is also a thing that I've recently heard that I'm not going to be able to remember. I'm going to guess it was a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that it was Avengers or something.
Close.
It
was, he was asked by George Lucas to direct Return of the Jedi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So back in the, I don't know what that would have been, the early 80s, mid 80s, he was asked, because they didn't know who was going to direct it, they didn't know what they wanted to do, and they sat down, there's a great clip of David Lynch explaining it on YouTube, that they sat down at George Lucas's giant office, and George Lucas started telling him about the movie, and David Lynch was kind of interested, and then he was like, I like space, and he's like, I would do it if, like, some of the characters die, like, something dramatic has to happen that hasn't occurred in the first two movies, and George Lucas is like, I don't know about that. And then George Lucas is like, what I really want the movie to be about are these little tiny cute creatures called Ewoks that dance and sing, and they have, like, crossbows and stuff. And David Lynch is like, at that moment, I knew I just had to get out of there.
Yeah.
But it's like, that would have been a completely different movie.
Can you fucking imagine?
I can't even imagine. It would have been so upsetting.
So upsetting and artsy.
Yeah.
And, like, crazy. We would have seen, like, those Ewoks would not have been the same at all.
They would have been little dancing demons with, like, masks on, and, like,
they'd come and, like, take over.
Han Solo would have been, like, stabbed to death or something. Like,
oh my gosh.
I'm sure it would have been, can you imagine Darth Vader? He was already spooky enough, and the Emperor, oh my gosh. It would have been too much.
It would have been way too much.
Can you imagine just a bunch of 7-year-olds in the theater in the 80s trying to watch that movie?
I cannot. I just, like, am upset thinking about
it. Yeah. I think it probably worked out for the best.
Oh my gosh, me too. I'm so glad that it worked out the way that it did.
Yeah.
David Lynch, that would have been, oh God, that would have been, like, so freaky. And it would have been, like, that would have been so upsetting. I wonder if that movie even would have been kind of dissociated with the franchise.
I think so, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, would we even think of Star Wars the way we think of it now with the three prequels and everything, the billion dollar franchise it is? Or would it just been like two movies and then this thing?
It also makes me wonder if David Lynch would have gotten more or less work out of that.
Yeah.
Because he would have been an even more polarizing figure than he already is.
Yeah.
Because he would have been, like, a household name as either a failure or a champion.
Yeah, exactly. So this guy ruined Star Wars.
Yeah. Or this guy saved the space opera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, he took it back to what it could have been, which is, like, this grand, very dramatic thing.
Crazy. Yeah. More food for thought.
Yeah. Always stuff to think about.
Well, thanks, Harrison George.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. This is great.